Are you getting the most out of Sage 200? Do you want a regular feed bursting with top tips, hints, and advice for you to streamline Sage 200? Then you've come to the right place. The Sage 200 Buzz Podcast, making the most out of everything Sage 200.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening from wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And welcome to the Sage 200 Buzz Podcast. My name is Hannah Munro, and I'm joined by my fabulous co-host, Mr. Mark Armstrong.
Good morning.
I like how you say good morning and I say good morning, good afternoon and good evening.
It is morning. After all.
It is indeed. So this week on the Sage 200 Buzz Podcast, we're answering your questions and questions from our clients on the payment processing. Then in the add-on review section, again, it's not what we'd cast as a typical add-on, but we're going to have a look at the Sage Payments function, because again, there is an additional charge for this one as well. So let's get started on the FAQ. Okay, so first question please, caller.
So first question is, can I reprint a remittance?
Oh, we get this one all the time. The answer is yes, but with a few qualifiers. So you can reprint a remittance if you have not deleted your suggested payments run. Once you have deleted, that is it. So there's no going back, unfortunately. So a couple of tips. Firstly, make sure you save your remittances as a PDF at the very least, or if you're emailing them out, obviously they will then appear in your outbox. Second tip, the other thing I guess you can do is not delete your suggested payments until next time you do a payments run, which is another way which gives you a bit more flexibility. Third thing you can do is invest like something called Spindle. So that will automatically file a copy of each remittance in a designated folder, whether that's by supplier or whether it's just a remittances folder, and then you can pull it up. So that's probably my three tips for reprinting a remittance as well. So next question, please, caller.
So next question is, what about direct debits / standing orders?
Okay, so... for those of you that don't know, there is actually a direct debits and standing order sort of function within the cash book. But sometimes, obviously, when that invoice differs every month, it's not actually practical to, and it doesn't work within that format. So one of the things I do say is, obviously, if you enter in the invoice and you set up a payment group called direct debits or standing orders, then you can run the payment group just for direct debits and standing orders every month. And that clears it down, and it automatically sort of enters the payment with the right value, and it also allocates it against the invoice. So that's one option for you. The good thing about that, obviously, is you can set it so it doesn't produce any files. So you just set it to payments only. So it doesn't reproduce the remittance and it doesn't produce a bank's file or anything like that. It's all managed through your system. So that is just a quick way of managing direct debits and standing orders. But that's assuming, obviously, you're entering the invoices in the first place.
Yeah, that's true.
So some people just prefer, rather than entering the invoice, to just enter the payment, but then you haven't actually got a record of it. So
yeah,
it's up to you. But yeah, that is one way to handle direct debits and standing orders through the system.
So next one then is, how does it manage payments to foreign suppliers?
Well, the short answer is it doesn't.
No.
The reality is that you can't actually import foreign currency payments through to your bank, which is why we were so excited when the Sage Payments piece came out, because that allows you to pay your suppliers in foreign currency. Obviously, you can create a group called CHAPS, and it'll automatically sort of create the payment against that supplier. But just bearing in mind, you cannot use it with a foreign currency bank account. So
yeah, just saying something to sort of bear in mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next one's about factor houses. So what if I need to pay a factor house instead of a supplier?
Okay, so there's two things you need to do with this. So firstly, you need to set up your factor houses. And well, technically three things. You need to set up the factor house, you need to link the supplier to the factor house, and you need to put the factor house account details in the supplier. Those three steps are obviously very important if you're using, that last one is very important if you're using e-banking, because that is the one that will get pushed through into the e-banking account. So the difference, obviously, the factor house just appears on the remittance. And don't forget, you can also set up a different contact to receive the remittance, mm-hmm. which will save you a little bit of time in terms of changing email addresses and things like that as well.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one, I know I've had several people sort of call me up about this, is what happens if the file isn't in the right format?
Oh my God, I've had this a couple of times. Mm. The first thing I'd always say is check you've got the latest version
yeah.
of the add-on installed. Now, Sage have a web page dedicated to e-banking compatibility. So if you literally go into Google and type in Sage 200 e-banking, or Sage 200 e-banking, the first sort of non-sponsored click is the Sage e-banking website. Now, that not only tells you whether the banking is compatible with your bank, so you can find it on the list, it'll tell you whether you can do payments or statements, but also it will allow you to download the plugin and the latest version of the plugin. Particularly with online, it doesn't give you the latest version when you install it, so it's very much worth checking to make sure you've got it, because the banks are pretty standard in that they all use, everyone using Santander needs to use the right format. So Sage normally develop it, but they don't always update the default plugin.
Yeah.
So really important that if it isn't in the right format, you don't spend ages changing it and tweaking it, you go and download the latest version.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, next question please, caller.
My bank isn't appearing in the dropdown.
Well, this is sort of similar to the other one, so the last one we just had. So if you haven't installed the plugin, mm-hmm. Now I think with on-premise, it comes by installed as default.
Yes.
But with online, you have to install it yourself. So if you go into the cog, click on installers, and then there's an e-banking installer.
Yeah.
That's step one. But in both circumstances, if your bank isn't in the drop-down, firstly, check is it compatible? Secondly, check you've got the latest version as well. And again, like I said, just go onto Google, type in Sage 200 e-banking, and it's there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So next one is, what controls can I put in place?
I get asked this a lot, because one of the things, obviously, with your e-banking is you're uploading the file to pay, and part of that file includes your supplier account details.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of times I get asked, well, how can I control that bit? You know, who can edit the supplier details? The short answer is you cannot control that individual section of the supplier, but what you can control is who can access the supplier, the supplier account details and amend the supplier account details.
Yeah.
Now, for pretty much all of the standard records, there's both a view screen, so view supplier details, and an edit screen. It's worth having some serious controls over who can edit those supplier details.
Yeah.
There is a very nice plugin which we've talked about on this program before called the Cycon audit trail,
yeah.
which will tell you who's updated what and when.
Yeah.
So from an audit perspective, that's a really good tool to have. But in terms of sort of stopping people doing it in the first place, you need to make sure you're controlling access to individual features. And obviously that's done through sysadmin.
Yeah. Okay, so looks like the last one here then is my bank supported?
And again, this is something, same sort of thing as the others, in that you must make sure you're checking before you start. Don't go getting excited about banking, because there's a couple of them, particularly I think a couple of the charity ones, where they're offshoots of the main bank and you do it through a different module. They don't support e-banking, so you must double check, particularly if it's not one of the main ones.
Yeah.
So pretty much RBS, HSBC, NatWest, Barclays, all of the biggies.
Yeah, they are all.
They're all supported, but there's a couple of the smaller ones that aren't, that, you know, we've had once or twice.
Yeah, just the point on that as well is just make sure that you are, because I think like the RBS one, there's like 3 or 4 different types.
Yeah.
Just make sure you're using the right one, because there are different, don't just see RBS and just hit the first one, because there are different types of RBS ones.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. So and that again is, it will have ramifications in that when that file's produced and you've spent all this time doing all your, all the sort codes and account details and everything else, and you've ticked all the boxes, and then you do your first payment run, gives you your file, and then you try to upload and it says no can do because you've used the wrong drop down.
Yeah, so just give your bank a call and they'll be able to tell you
service. Yeah, they'll tell you which one is the right one. Even if you're in two minds as to which one it should be, just check.
Well, you hope they would know which one you're using.
You'd like to think. Yeah.
Don't take anything for granted. So that's sort of a quick FAQ on payment processing, and that's some of the more common ones that we get asked sort of on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's the thing. We got a lot of calls about those ones, really.
And for those of you that don't know, if you are looking to set up payment processing, we will be producing a guide. So don't forget to subscribe to the Sage 200 Buzz or follow us on Twitter at ISAS Solutions. And the Sage 200 Buzz is a monthly newsletter. We don't spam. It's once a month. And it literally just has a list of the different blogs, guides and free reports that we give to our customers. And you can also get access to it as well. So don't forget to sign up to that. You can do that via our website, www.itassolutions.co.uk. Okay, so next on to our add-on review. So Mark, tell us all about Sage Payments.
So Sage Payments. Now, you may have heard of Sage Pay, which is sort of the counter to Sage Payments, in that Sage Pay allows you to, this is going to sound odd, but allows you to receive payments from customers.
Way to make it confusing.
Sage Payments allows you to pay suppliers.
They've kind of got that the wrong way around, haven't they, really?
A little bit. Although you think about it, Sage Payments is allowing you to do payments, and Sage Pay allows you to receive payments. So no, it's all a bit weird. But yeah, it's just one thing there just to... So the way the payments works is that it is like an additional, I believe it's in the services extra bundle.
No, actually, it's a completely separate, like Sage Pay, you have to subscribe to it separately.
I see, okay. And then once you do the subscription, basically you have like a sign-up process for customers, and then you get things like a Sage ID to log in with and that kind of thing. What it actually allows you to do then is essentially pay suppliers, and the big difference for me anyway is, although it's, you know, we've just gone through, we've spent two podcasts or three podcasts going through things like payment processing, the big difference for this one I've seen is that it allows you to do international payments.
Yes, massive difference.
So huge thing, because I mean there are a lot of people, especially on 200, that do have, you know, suppliers that are, you know, especially people that are manufacturing and things like that.
Yeah,
you know, they're getting things imported from different places, and I mean, there's just a lot of different sort of companies that will be set up in several different companies, particularly if you're part of maybe like a, you know, conglomerate or something along those lines. So that's a big, big one. You know, it gives you as well on that, it allows you to sort of see the different rates, you know, gains and losses and things like that on different rates. That sort of integrated with it as well. And it's, I believe, up to 24 different countries.
Really? And different currencies?
There's 11 different currencies with 24 different countries.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, quite extensive. You have to, I believe there is like a full page on it if you Google it. But it actually, there is 11 different currencies you can use. I'd probably struggle myself to name 11 currencies.
I'd give it a go.
Yeah. So that's probably the big one, really. Now, the way it works, there's basically like a process that you sort of follow when it comes to this, is that... You initially set up your set up or amend payees, which are your suppliers. Now that's all set up within the 200 itself. It does actually integrate with 50 as well, but we'll stick to the 200. What it then does is that once you've actually added those in, it has to be approved by, I think it's like a third party, I believe.
Yeah.
That Sage have sort of, you know, they kind of go through and make sure that yes, you can pay those people.
Okay, so do you have to manually enter it, or can you just pull it from Sage 200, like all the account details and
so
the customer?
Exactly. So that's the thing, is you go into 200. Once you enter the supplier details, I think there's like a workspace that comes free with it, and that workspace basically lists all the suppliers that you've listed as payees for this service.
Brilliant.
So once you've added those in, you're happy with it, and then you know it's now approved. You can then upload your payments. And once you've uploaded your payments as well, it's not, again, this is going back to the controls, is that you can actually have an authoriser for those payments.
Oh, good. So you can add another step into the process. So maybe one of the junior members could upload the payments and then a senior person could actually approve them.
Exactly. Because again, with all these kind of things, is that same with Sage Pay and Sage Payments, is that rather great at, you know, speeding things up and making things streamlined and whatever. You are giving more control in a sense, and you're actually allowing people in a sense to handle the company's money.
Yeah.
In some regards, when they're actually paying people. This isn't just like an accounting thing where you put an invoice onto a system. You know, you're actually giving money across to someone. It's always handy to have that extra step where, you know, and all it'll be for the payments for the authorised, in a similar way that the 200 is set up for payment authorisation, is that it, you know, you just have a list of them, and whoever's the authoriser is able to authorise those payments before they're actually sent out, and they can query them and, you know, reject them as well. So that's kind of the overview of payments. As I say, be very careful that it's not Sage Pay. It's Sage Payments. They're two completely different things. And I know when I initially Googled Sage Payments, one of the first pages that I got, funnily enough, was Sage Pay. So just be very careful as to which one you're going for there. But it's a really handy, and I think the big one for this really is that foreign currency.
Yeah.
Because it's something that we've been asked about so many, and it's something that stops people from using the really useful things like payment processing.
Yeah.
And now you can actually use, you know, a sort of an automated process rather than...
Okay, so how do you actually get your money into Sage Payments? I'm assuming that you have to sort of make a bank transfer.
Yeah, so the way that it works is that obviously if you're going to be paying people, you need money to pay them.
That's a good starting point.
It's a good starting point usually, yeah. Now, in order to do that, you'll have to move money across. This is external to 200, but you'll have to actually move money across into your Sage Payments account. It's similar to the way that PayPal's set up, in that, you know, you've got to have a balance on the account for you to then pay people. Mm. Now, obviously, when you do that, make sure that that's accounted for within 200
yeah.
by using the inter-account transfer within the cash book. Make sure that's used. Otherwise, you know, when you come down to your reconciliation times or doing reporting and things like that.
So it might be actually worth setting up a separate bank account for Sage Payments,
absolutely,
is what you're saying.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then obviously you do the transfer into Sage Payments
yeah.
and then the transfer from in, you know, actually in your bank account itself, and then also you do one in Sage 200 to move it across.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess that sort of almost decrease, you know, if you're paying lots of payments, then yeah, that'll work, or lots of foreign currency suppliers. But from a sort of, if you're only paying one or two, it almost makes it harder work, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I think with the payments is that it's great, and I think for people that are using foreign currency and they've got a lot of foreign currency suppliers, it's great, it's exactly what they've wanted. But I think for certain people it's just
not worth it.
It's not worth it, yeah, almost just using it. If you've not got foreign currency accounts, you know,
better off just using the standard one.
Payment processing, I think, yeah.
I agree.
I think so. Because I don't think it does add additional steps in. But those additional steps, if you've got hundreds of foreign currency accounts, those extra steps are worth it every time.
Yeah.
But if you've got, you know, three or four, sometimes it might not even be worth it just doing for the, you know, the three or four that you've got.
And don't forget that you also, you know, a couple of things, obviously, I guess, to bear in mind is one, you can pay your, you know, you could pay your, your staff through it, you can actually integrate with payroll.
Yeah.
But then you also have to pay for it. It's not a free service.
It doesn't just get sort of tacked on with 2016, sadly. It is an additional fee.
Yeah, so I guess you just got to look at the benefits versus the, you know, the reality, as it were, and the cost of doing so. So,
yeah, exactly.
And, you know, again, there'll be certain people that this works really well for. There's also going to be quite a few where it's just not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So have you got any ideas about how much it costs?
Yeah, well, interestingly, the way they actually set the payment plans up is that there's five different levels.
Wow, that's quite a lot, isn't it?
So you've got your basic, standard, extra, advantage and complete.
Oh, wow.
And basically it starts from £10 a month going up to £130.
Wow, that's a big difference, isn't it?
That actually depends on, so you've actually got to pay a little bit extra for all the international payments.
Ah, so what level does the foreign currency payment start at?
Well, they are included across the board. Interestingly, it looks as though it's a little bit cheaper for the international payments if you go a little bit higher.
Ah, right, okay.
But there's the big thing with this is the payments allowance.
Yeah.
You're only allowed so many.
Oh, really?
So, for example, your basics, which is £10 a month, is 15 payments.
Yeah.
And there is actually an overage charge that they'll charge, a surplus, if you want to go over that.
Oh, really?
Which is 50p. for payment.
Okay.
Now your big one at the top, which is your complete, which is 130 a month, you get 750 payments.
Yeah.
And that's only got an overage charge of 30 pence, and the international payments price is £6 on that one.
Yeah.
So again, it's just about choosing which one there is going to be suitable for you.
Yeah.
You know, even though the £10 one might sound quite cheap, it might get to a point in 3 months' time where that's just, you know, you have more than 15 suppliers now that are foreign currency. Just something else to sort of bear in mind, in that it's not just like a straightforward, you know, like this extra services, extra sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's different levels of this now. There's 5 different levels just to consider.
Okay.
And there is different charges on top of that.
Okay, so is there anything else we need to know about Sage payments?
I think that's everything for now. As I say, I think as an overall sort of piece, it's interesting and it's a good starting point. I think there's some tweaks that could be made from Sage's end just to streamline things ever so slightly.
Yeah, I have to say, I think it just needs a little bit more work, personally. I think they haven't gone far enough. The base is there.
Yeah, that's the thing. The base is there, and hopefully if they can just do that little bit extra for it, just to help streamline things, you know. I personally think that 5 plans is quite a lot for payments. But, you know, I don't know, maybe that is suitable for it. It gives the people a lot of choice then as to what they want to go for, rather than just having the basic and the full.
Yeah, if you are using Sage Payments, actually, we'd love to hear from you. Mm. We'd love to, you know, what do you think could be improved with Sage Payments? Does it need improving?
Yeah.
You know, and how are you using it within business? We'd love to hear from you. So please, you know, get in touch if you are using it or you've considered using it as well. So worth bearing in mind, people. We like to keep it honest here on the Sage 200 Buzz podcast. So that's it from us this week. We hope it's been useful. Any questions, any queries you have, and maybe we haven't gone through something as clearly as you'd hoped, just let us know. We'd love to hear your feedback. Tweet us at ITAS Solutions, or send us an email, info@itas.org.uk, or leave us a message on through our website and the contact us page. We hope you have a great week, and that's it from us on the Sage 200 Buzz podcast. Bye, guys.
You have been listening to Sage 200 Buzz. To get in touch, visit itasolutions.co.uk or leave an email or a message using info@itas.org.uk. Also, you can find us on Twitter @itassolutions. Please leave feedback. Having difficulties with Sage 200? For friendly expert support, contact the Sage 200 specialists on 0845 139 1300.